Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Molly in the Twin Towers, a 9/11 survival story by Jessica Fleck. Narrated by April Doty. Chapter 1. Molly's Apartment, Tribeca, New York City. September 10th, 2001. 8:30 p.m.
And just as Little Red Riding Hood entered the wood.
Papa paused and glanced back at me. He cleared his throat, which meant he was going into an even lower, more menacing voice.
A wolf met her.
From the corner of my eye, I saw my sister, Addie, pull our family cat, Rolo, up next to her. She covered herself and the cat with her quilt. I smirked and raised my eyebrow at Papa. At 12, I was getting too old for bedtime stories. These old fairy tales didn't scare me anymore. I'd moved on to more grown-up books since starting middle school this year. But my dad's considered story time an important tradition. Plus, my sister lived for it. And since we shared a bedroom, I didn't have much choice. It could be worse, though. At least we read out of the actual Brothers Grimm book. Those stories were pretty strange. Definitely creepy. Across the room, Adeline shivered in her bed. I might be too old to be scared, but at 7 years old, Addie still got nervous. Even though Little Red Riding Hood had been her choice, I knew she'd be keeping me up tonight. As Papa continued, I forced my eyes to stay open. I couldn't fall asleep yet. I had more important reading to do after he was finished. That's when I read what I wanted. It was as if Papa knew this and read the words extra slowly tonight. When my head nodded backward, I jumped up and sat up taller. From the chair, Dad smiled. I'd been caught. As Papa continued reading, my mind wandered. My eyes roamed the bedroom I shared with my sister. The old lava lamp we kept on all night made shadows dance against the wall and up onto the ceiling. At certain angles, the light reflected on my snow globe collection. My collection took up several shelves. Papa brought me one from each new city he visited. As an airline pilot, he visited a lot of different places. My favorite was the one from Venice, Italy. Inside the small glass globe, a couple sat side by side on a gondola. When I shook the globe, flower petals floated all around them. Papa read on, ending with the last line.
Red Riding Hood went joyously home, and no one ever did anything to harm her again.
With that, he closed the book. You know, I said, I read that in one version, the wolf makes Little Red Riding Hood eat her grandmother.
What?
In her bed, Addie looked horrified.
That's not true, is it?
She looked at Papa, then Dad for confirmation. Poor Rolo was basically a rag doll in her clutches at this point. Dad shook his head at me.
Molly, please don't scare your sister.
He had a point. The more scared Addie was, the more likely she was to end up in my bed during the night. It's just an old story, I shrugged and gave Addie a soft smile. Back then, they didn't have TV or radio or anything. Books were like the only entertainment. Sometimes they got super weird. I glanced to my bedside table. The book I couldn't wait to dig back into was waiting for me. Like Frankenstein. I picked it up and showed it to my sister. Addie cringed at the scary monster on the cover. I placed it face down on my bed. Forget that part. My point is that Frankenstein is only a story about a misunderstood monster. Little Red Riding Hood is just a story about a girl who meets a mean wolf. But they're just stories. Addie's shoulders softened, and she allowed the cat to move from her lap to the foot of her bed.
But why would Red Riding Hood eat her grandmother?
Just then, Gran popped her head into the room.
Did I hear the words, eat her grandmother, come out of my baby granddaughter's mouth?
Gran's eyes were wide behind her glasses in exaggerated shock. Addy nodded proudly, but the expression on her face showed I'd freaked her out. I hadn't meant to. Not really. Gran, Papa's mother, came into the room already in her pajamas, ready for bed. She had lived with us for as long as I could remember. She'd moved into our old apartment, temporarily, to help after I was born. She'd done the same when Adeline came along 7 years ago, but it ended up staying. With the addition of my sister, we needed a larger apartment, and Manhattan was expensive. Plus, it made sense with busy schedules and Papa traveling so much.
Listen, Gran said to Addy, your big sister is full of stories. It's something that'll serve her well someday.
She sat next to Addy on her bed.
But for now, you just ignore it and have sweet dreams.
Gran pulled the quilt up under Addie's chin. She tucked it in all around her until she was like a burrito. Addy smiled happily. We both loved having Gran live with us, me more than anyone. Gran and I were super close. I'd even been named after her.
Night, Gran, Addy said, barely able to hold her eyes open.
Gran winked at me as she left the room. She'd be back later to say goodnight to me, once my dad's had gone to bed. She knew I'd still be reading. Finally. I grabbed my copy of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Addie's eyes were closed, but just in case, I removed the dust jacket with a picture of Frankenstein's monster.
Not too late, kiddo, Papa said. Early flight for me in the morning, so I won't see you.
He leaned in and whispered, in case Addy hadn't quite drifted off yet.
Keep that goofy sister of yours out of trouble, okay?
I pressed my lips together and nodded. That was easier said than done. Addy tended to get into a lot of mischief. Still, I said, I'll try. Dad got up from his chair. He gently pulled one of my braids and kissed me on the forehead.
Sweet dreams, Molly Moo.
Papa leaned over and gave me a hug. He always smelled of woodsy soap, and his beard tickled my cheek when he said,
sleep tight. Love you.
I love you, too.
Our dads kissed a sleeping Addy goodnight, too. They were almost out the door when I asked,
wait, where are you flying to tomorrow?
Papa turned around and came back in. He picked up my newest snow globe, the one from the World Trade Center. We'd taken Dad's parents there when they'd visited from Oklahoma over the summer. Papa shook it up.
St. Louis, Missouri.
With a big arch?
That's the one.
He looked at me with dark eyes. Addy had them, too. Our dads had used a different surrogate for each of our births. I got Dad's light eyes and dusty hair. Addy got Papa's beautiful darker features and curly hair, which she claimed to hate. I sat up straighter, opening the thick book to the marked spot.
Papa?
Yeah?
Don't forget.
I didn't have to say exactly what he needed to remember. Papa always knew.
Never. One St. Louis snow globe coming your way in a couple of days.
Papa put the globe back and left my room, leaving the door open a crack. I arranged my pillows to make the perfect reading nest. I had just leaned back and set my bookmark to the side when...
Did you know Mary Shelley first published that book anonymously?
Gran popped her head back into my bedroom.
People assumed it was her husband who wrote it.
I read that, I shook my head. So unfair.
It was a sexist time. Still is. But it's gotten better since poor Mary's age.
Gran winked. She was full of random facts.
I have to be at the station by 7 tomorrow morning for my shift. I'll leave you a surprise in the kitchen, though.
I smiled. Gran's surprises were the best. They could be anything from a piece of candy to tickets to a Broadway show. Gran wasn't your typical grandma. She was an EMT for the New York City Fire Department. She still knit blankets and cooked and stuff, though, so she said it evened out.
Night, kid,
Gran said. Don't stay up too late. Not unless it's worth it.
I won't,
I smiled. Settling into my bed, I pulled my comforter up to my chin and picked up where I'd left off. I couldn't help the shiver that went up my spine as I read. The lava lamp shadows moving across my wall looked more and more like monstrous creatures by the second. Still, I turned the page and kept reading. I must have dozed off soon after, because I jumped awake at the sound of the floor creaking. I glanced at the clock. Midnight. My book had fallen onto my chest. I picked it up and closed it, then placed it on my bedside table. For a moment, everything was quiet. Maybe I imagined the noise, I thought. But then, in the hallway, it sounded again. This time the creak was longer and closer. I knew Frankenstein was just a story, but the only thing I could think about was the monster on the front of my book. His tall, hunched figure would cast a looming shadow across my room, just like the one the street lamp cast as it shone against the tall, spindly tree outside my window. I glanced over at my sister's bed. There was no movement. She seemed to be sleeping soundly. I rolled onto my side, curled into my comforter. There's nothing out there, I told myself. But there was something out there. It scratched at my door. The hinges groaned as the door opened. I pulled the blanket clear over my head and squeezed my eyes shut. Quick footsteps padded toward my bed, and my heart leapt into my throat.
Molly!
A voice hissed from the side of my bed. An annoyed meow followed. That's all it took for me to realize the culprits. I rolled over and peeked out from under my comforter. Addie, her hair a wild halo of tangles, stood before me. Rolo was held captive in her clutches. I looked across at Adeline's bed again. My sister's sleeping form was nothing more than a pile of stuffed animals. Her bed had been empty the whole time. "What are you doing up?" I snapped. Addie glanced at the door, then back at me.
"I got up to get a drink, but then I got scared by a shadow. It looked like a wolf."
I looked at the silhouette stretching from my window to my ceiling. "Shadows can be scary," I admitted, "but it was probably just Rolo. It's okay, I promise." Addie nodded, squeezing the cat more tightly.
"Can Rolo and I sleep with you tonight?" she asked.
Without waiting for an answer, she shoved me over and climbed into my bed. "Addie, there's no room," I protested. My sister ignored me and tossed pillow after pillow to the floor.
"There! Now there's room."
Through the dark, I could see her proud smile. I sighed. "Fine. Only for tonight."
"Okay."
But it wouldn't hold up. It never did. Addie made her way into my bed most nights before Papa would be flying. She was 5 years younger than me and didn't like the thought of him being gone. I'd worried about Papa when I was younger, too. Now, though, I was so used to him traveling that it didn't bother me anymore. But as much as I reassured Addie that flying was safe and Papa was a good pilot, she still had a hard time. "Papa will be fine," I said lightly, trying to make up for being annoyed by her.
"He's the best pilot around. He could probably do loop-de-loops if he wanted." "Yeah?" Addie whispered.
I could see her eyes light up at the idea.
"Oh, yeah. Definitely.
That'd be cool."
I grabbed the fleece blanket at the foot of my bed and wrapped us up in it. Our room had grown colder since reading. After so many months of summer heat, I couldn't wait for a crisp, fall-like September. The change would be nice. I smiled as I drifted back to sleep. I knew there was nothing to worry about. Flying was safe. Chapter 2. Molly's Apartment, Tribeca, New York City, September 11th, 2001, 7 a.m.
When I awoke, what felt like a minute later, my alarm clock was buzzing. From the kitchen, Dad shouted, "Breakfast in 10 minutes!" I sat up to push the snooze button and realized I was alone in the room. Both my sister and the cat had disappeared. Addie had probably gotten up early to say goodbye to Gran and Papa before they left for work. I hopped out of bed and opened my window to check the temperature. The minute I did, the sights and sounds of Lower Manhattan hit me. Cars honked and buses trucked by. Dogs barked and birds chirped. The hum of traffic and the chatter of people all mixed together into one low murmur. The Manhattan skyline greeted me, as it did each morning. The Empire State Building and the World Trade Center were the easiest to spot. My school sat just a few blocks away from the tall towers of the World Trade Center. A breeze wove through the trees and my open window, blowing the yellow curtains like a sail. People seemed to think that there was no nature in the city, but that wasn't true. Sometimes you just had to listen a bit harder to hear it. It was a beautiful September morning. I decided to finally wear the knit beanie Gran had made for my birthday. Then I threw on my favorite worn jeans, a t-shirt, and my trusty high tops.
5 minutes, Dad called.
Almost ready. I ducked into the bathroom and ran a brush through my hair. The beanie would cover the rest. I rushed to the kitchen. Addie sat on a stool, facing Dad, who poured a cup of coffee for himself across the breakfast bar. Our kitchen wasn't much more than a nook with a refrigerator and oven, but it was cozy. Printed curtains framed the small window over the sink that housed Gran's mini herb garden. Dad's idea of a gourmet breakfast was cold cereal and milk, and today he'd gone all out. 5 different types of cereal loomed like a cityscape in the middle of the kitchen counter. A pitcher of milk stood like a great water tower to their side. I wasn't a huge cereal fan, but with Papa and Gran gone, I would have to make do. I grabbed the box that held the only kind I would eat and turned it completely upside down over a bowl. Nothing. Well, not exactly nothing. A few sad crumbs and 3 perfect apple-flavored O's dropped into my empty bowl with a quiet clank. I eyed Addie. Her bowl was overflowing with green and orange O's, and she clearly knew what she'd done because the little sneak refused to look at me.
"Adeline, you know that's the only one I'll eat," I said.
"Well, I wanted some, too."
Addie shoved a heaping spoonful into her mouth. She chewed, then swallowed.
"It's not fair you get them all. Besides, it's not like your name's on it."
"Oh, yeah?"
My face turned hot with anger. Maybe it was from the lack of sleep. Addie had tossed and turned all night, rolling herself up like a burrito and stealing all the covers. Maybe it was because all I wanted to eat was one measly bowl of my cereal. Is that too much to ask? I grabbed the box, turned it to face my sister, and shoved it between her and her spoon, mid-bite. On the front, written in bold black marker, were the words, "Molly's. Do not touch." Instead of apologizing, Addie rolled her eyes. I leaned closer, ready to say something I'd probably regret. But before I could, Dad swooped in between us.
"I have a backup,"
he announced, setting a light pink pastry box on the counter.
Well, Gran had a backup. Somehow she always knows, doesn't she?
Dad opened the box, and inside were 2 donuts. One in the shape of an M with chocolate frosting and chocolate sprinkles. The other was an A with pink frosting and rainbow sprinkles. Grand surprise, I realized. I forced down the smile that wanted to sneak out. I wasn't done being annoyed with Addie. Instead, I grabbed the M donut and went to gather my school things. backpack on, I returned to the kitchen to get my lunch when I remembered Papa's note. He always left a note when he went on a trip. Sure enough, on the refrigerator was a paper held up by fruit-shaped magnets. Papa had drawn his airplane and then the loose outlines of New York and Missouri. Hash marks connected one state to the other, marking his path. A note on the bottom read, "My love soars for you. See you all on Friday. Love, Papa." I rolled my eyes, but smiled. Papa was the king of bad dad jokes.
"You ready, Molly?" Dad asked.
"Yep," I replied.
"Since we're early, I thought we could take the bus part of the way, and then walk the last 10 minutes or so," Dad suggested. "It's a nice day outside."
I nodded. "Okay." I liked walking, but with Addie, the 20-minute walk to school took twice the time. We usually rode the bus all the way instead. Dad's plan was a good compromise.
"Plus, you're wearing your hat. Might as well get some good use out of it."
Dad grabbed his keys and wallet.
"Adeline, grab your stuff."
As usual, Addie took forever. When she finally returned, she was wearing her favorite rainbow-striped sweater, the one she refused to leave the house without. It had been her baby blanket, her whoopee she'd slept with every night. When Addie had started kindergarten 2 years ago, she decided she was too old for a security blanket, but she also couldn't bear to be without it. That's when Gran turned it into a sweater for her.
"If we hurry, we can still make the bus," Dad said as he helped Addie up. "Piggyback ride?"
She nodded, then climbed onto his back. We made it to the bus stop without a minute to spare and hopped on. The ride wasn't too far, only 15 minutes or so. When we got off, we were across the street from the World Trade Center. I looked straight ahead at the two main towers. They stood like twin pillars, two endless tree trunks reaching up into the sky. I got dizzy every time I looked up at them, but I couldn't help myself. The towers were beautiful, powerful and delicate at the same time. They looked as though they were made of glass. Like if you threw a stone at a single window, the whole building might splinter and shatter. But they were also strong. Each glass tower was protected by a series of metal tracks that ran the length of the building, like a lovely birdcage. The tracks helped the towers withstand the gustiest of winds and snowstorms and ice. Both towers were mostly full of businesses and offices belonging to important financial companies. The New York Stock Exchange was there, too. That stuff didn't really interest me, but I'd been in the North Tower over the summer when my grandparents had visited. We'd taken them to the Windows on the World, the restaurant near the top. We'd visited the observation deck, too. It was kind of scary being up that high, but mostly it had been beautiful. You could see the entire city from up there. Dad, Addie, and I started walking toward school, a few blocks away from the World Trade Center. Even though Addie and I went to different schools, she was in the second grade and I was in the sixth, our school shared one building. My part of the school was in the best location. If you looked out the window at the right angle from some of the classrooms, including my study hall, you could see the towers. A cool breeze brushed my cheeks as we walked. Yesterday it had been rainy, hot, and humid, but today couldn't be more different. The sky was blue. Not a cloud in sight. Thankfully, Addie moved faster than usual, skipping her way down the sidewalk. When we made it to the school entrance, the 5-minute warning bell rang.
"You go on, Molly. I'm going to take your sister inside. Have a good day," Dad said, giving me a hug.
I waved goodbye to Addie. When I walked around the corner to the entrance of my school, I nearly slammed into my best friend Zachary.
"Molly!" Zach exclaimed.
A huge grin stretched across his face. Zach was always way too happy about being at school.
"Walk much?"
he giggle snorted, his signature laugh. "Yeah, yeah." I rolled my eyes playfully. Zach and I had been best friends since about second grade. I wasn't offended by him giving me a hard time. Before I could say anything else, the final bell rang,
I followed Zack's familiar outfit, blue baseball cap, t-shirt, and jeans, down the hallway. We rushed into our homeroom class right before Ms. Hayden closed the door. Our teacher took attendance while the morning announcements played over the intercom. I got lost in the beautiful day outside, distracting myself, counting how many people were walking their dogs. I just counted dog number 5, a scruffy black and white puppy that looked like a teddy bear, when the strangest thing happened. As if they'd rehearsed it, everyone in the street stopped at the same time. They literally halted mid-step. Then they all looked up. Before I could figure out why, a huge boom erupted outside. It almost sounded fake, as if I was in a movie theater and the surround sound was turned all the way up. But this was real life. The noise shook our entire school like a humongous, angry clap of thunder. The glass in the window next to me shuddered. I jumped in my seat and clapped my hands over my ears. For a moment, everyone was still. Then the entire class rushed toward the windows as hazy smoke filled the view. On the street, the same people who, moments earlier, had been frozen in place were now running. Chapter 3, Riverfront Middle School, Lower Manhattan, September 11th, 2001, 8:50 a.m. The scene outside was like nothing I had ever seen. People in the city tended to move quickly. Everyone was always late for something, but this was mass confusion. It was as if no one knew where to go or what to do, but everyone was trying to get somewhere else, and fast. My heart raced in my chest. What is going on? Outside, the smoke grew thicker.
What do you think it is? Zack asked.
I assumed he was talking to me, even though he was still looking out the window. I have no idea, I replied, but it can't be good. We all talked at once, everyone asking questions. Finally, Miss Hayden got our attention.
Everyone, try to stay calm, she said. I'm sure everything is all right. I'm going to step into the hallway to see if there's any information. Please stay in your seats and find something quiet to do.
Yeah, right, I thought. That's like asking Addie to sit still with a pile of puppies in front of her. The minute Miss Hayden left, everyone went back to chattering and speculating. There were theories, from a fire, to a bomb, to a car accident. I didn't think it had been a car accident. The people on the street had all looked up at the sky. But suddenly, anything seemed possible, and none of it made the pit of my stomach feel any better. Part of me wanted to speculate, too, but it was as if I was frozen, just like those people outside my window had been, only I wasn't staring up at the sky. Instead, I was biting my fingernails, worried, afraid. And if I was worried, how must Addie feel? What was happening in her classroom? I was surrounded by 6th graders who could barely keep calm. I couldn't imagine how a bunch of 6- and 7-year-olds must be reacting. Just then, Miss Hayden came back in the classroom. Before she could say anything, the ding that signaled an announcement sounded over the loudspeaker. Everyone went still. The principal's voice came through the speaker.
Teachers and students, there is a large fire near the top of one of the World Trade Center towers. There is no need to worry or panic. However, we will be calling your parents to come pick you up from school. In the meantime, your teachers will instruct you to move to either the gym or the cafeteria. Please be orderly, quiet, and calm.
A fire, I thought. At the top of the tower? If that was supposed to make me feel better, it didn't. Maybe it's the restaurant? Fires start in restaurants all the time, right? Still, something didn't feel right. We left the classroom and made our way down the hall in a single-file line. I couldn't help but notice that all the adults looked worried. It was as if they were talking to one another without using words. Based on their expressions, the conversations didn't seem good. As we walked, I overheard a couple of parent volunteers talking. The fire's enormous, one whispered.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?